This from Rahm Emanuel, who's chief of staff to the President of the United States. You never let a serious crisis go to waste. Given the recent recall of a half billion eggs contaminated with salmonella, it should be obvious to all that the United States is once again experiencing a serious food safety crisis. And so, with guns drawn and warrants in hand, agents of the government are breaking down the doors of the little people who sell food to their neighbors. But the government's exploitation of this crisis leads us to ask, which is in crisis, local food or industrial food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 697th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Quebec City who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, focus intently once again on the words of Rahm Emanuel. You never let a serious crisis go to waste. Now, the United States is in the midst of a serious food safety crisis, and the government, apparently, is not about to let it go to waste. Eggs, hamburgers, spinach, peanuts, baby formula, pet food, you name it, it seems to be contaminated with harmful microbugs. And so, with guns drawn and warrants in hand, the government is breaking down doors in its war against the bad bugs. The front line of this government's food safety war appears to be the little people who sell fresh whole milk to their friends and neighbors. But while contaminated food sicken millions every year, with a third of the million going to the hospital and 5,000 dying, very few are stricken or sickened by fresh whole milk. In fact, according to the CDC, of the 76 million people sickened by contaminated food every year, only about 116 are linked to fresh whole milk. Despite the incredible disparity in these numbers, fresh whole milk has become the battleground in the government's effort to manage the food safety crisis. Folks, it's as if the West Coast is being invaded by the Chinese Red Army, and our government is retaliating by invading Bermuda. The perplexing nature of this government effort to exploit our food safety crisis leads us to ask, which is in crisis, local food or industrial food? And who better to ask today than two people who have been on the front lines of this food safety battle for quite a while now, Sally Fallon and Pete Kennedy. Now, we'll start off with Sally. Sally Fallon Morrell, President, Weston A. Price Foundation. Sally, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
A thumbnail of Weston A. Price for those who have not heard the name or don't know who Mr. Price was.
Oh, Dr. Price was a dentist who traveled all over the world in the 30s and 40s to try to answer this question, what is a healthy diet? He wrote up his findings in a book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, and he focused in on the principles of healthy diets among healthy people, and he was a dentist, so he determined health by how healthy their teeth were. And we have named this organization after him. We provide accurate, science-based information on diet and health in an environment where there is a lot of conflicting claims and
that's for sure.
Agendas and non-scientific information or non-scientific recommendations that are actually making people sicker.
And, you know, one of the things that Weston A. Price learned, of course, was that people who had healthy bone structures often apparently consumed a lot of dairy, correct?
He looked at several cultures that did consume dairy. In Africa, Northern Africa, and one in Europe, and he found them to be extremely healthy. They were consuming raw dairy products. People who consume dairy foods tend to be taller than people who don't, and dairy does give a lot of advantage, a lot of evolutionary advantage to people.
Sally, who pays the way for the Weston A. Price Foundation?
We're a membership-supported organization. We have about 15,000 members who pay dues and give donations. We do not accept any funding from the government or from any of the food industry. We do have members who are farmers who are members and pay for their memberships, but we are completely independent of any special interests.
Good enough. Also with us today, Pete Kennedy, Executive Director of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Pete, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Morning, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Farmer to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Now, this must be something new in the history of the human race.
Very old, but under attack today. More so in the past. Our purpose is to enable farmers and consumers to engage in direct commerce without government harassment interference.
So is there a history of this government interference between the direct commerce between farmer and consumer? I mean, it seems to me like this would be a relatively new innovation in human activity where the government would tell a farmer he can't sell food to a consumer.
Well, the way the laws are set up today, they seem to favor the big producers, those who have the economy of scale to comply with them. We try and protect the small producers who want to market their products direct to the final consumer. Most of our farmer members do produce and sell raw milk direct to the consumer. And in spite of what you might think about the history, there is there's quite a bit of pushback against raw milk producers by the government today.
Well, Pete, the Farm Consumer Legal Defense Fund has filed a lawsuit against the federal government claiming that it's unconstitutional to ban the sale of fresh whole milk from farmer to consumer. And the government had a most interesting response. You do not have a fundamental right to obtain any food you wish. Where did they come up with that? You do not have a fundamental right to obtain any food you wish.
We always suspected that this was FDA's position, but we were surprised that they put that in the document of public record. The substantive due process clause of our federal constitution gives us the right to life, liberty, and property, and I don't know what's more basic to any of those things than the right to obtain the foods of your choice, but apparently FDA disagrees. They not only said what you just stated, but they also said there is no right, fundamental right to physical or bodily health, or no fundamental right to feed your children the foods you believe best for their health.
Take what we have to give you and shut up. Something along those lines. Pete, who pays the way for the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund? You get a lot of money from Monsanto?
Oh, all the time. We get we're funded by membership fees and then also donations. Again, like Weston Price, we get no donations from the government, and I'm not aware of any corporate donations either.
Okay, well, not with us today, folks, are representatives from the Center for Disease Control. I wrote them and asked them for a representative to come and tell us why the government is so terrified of fresh whole milk. But they, of course, did not want to have anything to do with making that statement on the radio, so they're not with us today. So you're going to have to help me out here today and figure out. The question on the table today is what food is in crisis? Is it the local food that our friends and neighbors grow and sell us, or is it the industrial food that comes from thousands of miles away from some factory? So let's start with milk, because that is the battleground of local food. And something is really not quite clear to me at all. I see a lot of media accounts, and actually we've covered them, even worked with Pete on the government going after small people, little people who grow things and sell them to their neighbors. And it seems to be happening across the country. And we got to figure out if this is really something that's going on, or is Michael Olson's imagination running amok again? This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. That is the question of the day. What is in crisis? Is it local food, or is it institutional industrial food going thousands of miles away? Sally Fallon Morrell with us, and also Pete Kennedy and you. The phone numbers, if you care to participate today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to look and see just exactly what the government is going after in its fight for food safety. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about the government's effort to manage the food crisis and where they're taking that effort. We have Sally Fallon Morrell from the Weston A. Price Foundation, Pete Kennedy, who's the executive director of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Is it my imagination, or is the government really going after the little people who sell foods that they grow or to each other? It seems like I keep reading in these accounts where the government is going into farmhouses and little grocery stores and with guns drawn and warrants in hand and just taking charge.
We had not only the Rossum Club, which you've probably heard about, that was a raid in Venice a few weeks ago, a private food club where they agents from federal and state agencies came in with guns drawn and took all the food. But we had something I think it was last year, a little co-op. Not even doing raw milk, and they came in, you know, black-clothed people, and absolutely terrified this family and held them at gunpoint and so forth. So there have been incidents like this, and, you know, people are scratching their heads because it's obviously the industrial food that's making people sick. The recent egg recall, these were huge confinement facilities with manure 4 to 8 feet thick in the facilities.
Two farms produce a half a billion eggs.
Right. Now, this crisis, and you know, they're taking advantage of this crisis to promote S-510, the Senate food safety legislation.
Right.
This bill, if it should pass, would be an absolute disaster for the small farmer. It would not make our food safer, but it would impose on small farms, anyone who does any kind of processing, produce sellers, very onerous paper requirements, HACCP plans and so forth, that would just be would just kill this wonderful growing small farm movement.
Well, you know, I was once a student body president of a college at a particular momentous period of time, and everybody was up in arms about everything. And there were two sociology professors who did a particularly onerous trick. They composed a letter to the editor disparaging their own ethnic heritage, and then they sent it to the school, and then when it was published, they made a big deal about, and of course they signed it, their political opposition. And so when the letter came out, they made all of these whoop-de-doo about something that they themselves have done. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't think it possible, do you?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know,
interesting. The this food safety bill has been languishing in the Senate since last November when it passed committee. It still hasn't come to the floor for a vote. So on August 12th, this new manager's amendment to the bill was released. And what do you know? On August 13th, the first press release about Wright County Egg came out. And
so, of course, that was just an accident, right? You don't think anybody would purposefully contaminate 500 million eggs and send them out to the United States to pass a bill in the Senate, do you?
Well, I think what needs to be said here is FDA had plenty of power under current law to adequately deal with this problem. They did not. They never inspected a Wright County egg until
after the fact.
The illness was already underway, and when you look at the track record of that firm, there's plenty of evidence there to suggest that FDA should have been inspecting them a long time ago.
And with this new legislation, it'll just be more of the same. The big guys can always get around it, out of it. They have expensive lawyers. They can,
Well, I think Pete Kennedy hit it right on the head. Yeah. They have the economies of scale.
That's right.
To be able to spread their costs over 500 million eggs.
Right, right. And the little guy does not have the same, even if he were treated fairly under this bill, it would still be extremely expensive for him to comply.
Yeah, what you really have, Michael, is you have the industrial food system being responsible for this outbreak and then being rewarded for causing this problem by having this bill passed that will create regulations that they'll be able to comply with, but the small producer will not.
So it's as if the Chinese Red Army is invading the Pacific West Coast and the government responds by ordering an attack on Bermuda.
I think that's good. Yes.
Right. And we've got a preview of what's to come, particularly with these HACCP plans.
HACCP is what, for people who do not know?
HACCP stands for Hazardous Analysis Critical Control Points, and basically what it is, where they want you to develop a food safety plan where you're going to tell them the areas of your production system that are most vulnerable to contaminants and basically what you're going to do about it.
Well, let me ask you this. For those farmers who are growing and selling food at the farmer's market and to their neighbors and whatnot, do they not do that, Sally?
Have a HACCP plan?
Do they not pay attention to their food safety?
Of course they do, and they have to because they know their customers and they know how much business they could lose if their food is not safe. They're not going to do anything that's going to make their customers sick. They have every incentive to make their food safe, and they don't need a HACCP plan to do that. And just because you have a HACCP plan in place does not necessarily ensure that your food's going to be safe. You still have to do it.
Do you think these two chicken or egg farms in the Midwest had a HACCP plan in place?
That's a good question. Maybe Pete can answer that. Were they required to have a HACCP?
Well, if they did, they weren't following it.
Yes, right.
And that gets back to what I was going to say earlier. We've already seen this in the meat industry, and what happened there was that when USDA was enforcing these HACCP plans, they went after the small slaughterhouses and processors, basically paperworked them to death, and then with the big slaughterhouses, they used the HACCP plan as an excuse not to do actual physical inspections of these slaughter plants, just looked at their HACCP plan. You know, the big slaughterhouses had the lawyers to contend with them, so they didn't give them a hard time about their HACCP plans, and that's where the problems are with the big slaughterhouses. Meanwhile, a large number of the smaller processors went out of business.
So what I don't understand is how did fresh whole milk become the battleground over this food safety? The numbers just don't make any sense. There's a Professor Philip Rudnick searched the government database for milk-related illnesses and found that there was one death attributed to fresh whole milk in the 57 years the government kept track of these things. In the same period, over 2 million people died from FDA-approved drugs. So
was a cancer patient, someone who had a very compromised immune system.
Oh, okay. So in 57 years, one person with cancer died, and it was somehow related to fresh whole milk. So here you have this mind-boggling disparity in numbers. Just incomprehensible that in 57 years, one person that's suffering from cancer has some raw milk and dies. Whereas with the FDA-approved drugs, over 2 million people died in the same period. And yet, it's the people who are selling the fresh whole milk that are the subject of this government food safety war. So I'd like to pick that up when we come back and ask, why milk? With Sally Fallon and Pete Kennedy and you right back. Well, this from Rahm Emanuel, Chief of Staff to the President of the United States. You never let a serious crisis go to waste. And folks, we are in a serious crisis with respect to our food safety. Those foods that are coming to us from thousands of miles away in big giant factories, like the two egg factories in the Midwest that we had to recall 500 million salmonella contaminated eggs, are having a tough time keeping themselves clean. And so the government is going to take advantage of this crisis. And what they're going to do, though, might surprise you, because it certainly did me. It appears as though they're going after the little people who grow and sell food to their friends and neighbors, and not those big people who are serving up the contaminated foods from China or wherever. So today we're looking at this situation, and in particular we're focusing on the fresh whole milk world, where people have a few cows and they are selling the fresh whole milk to their friends and neighbors, and the government is seemingly really intent on putting an end to this trade. So why is the government so terrified of fresh whole milk and yet so friendly to the drugs that are killing us by the millions? Sally Fallon, what's going on here?
Well, there's many, many, many reasons. First of all, if people are buying milk direct, they are bypassing the dairy industry and the whole idea of necking down into some kind of process, whether it be irradiation or pasteurization or whatever.
Down, you mean forcing something through?
Yes,
right?
Forcing something like through an hourglass. And that's where all the money is, of course. This milk makes people...
Well, maybe not money, but certainly control.
Well, control and money,
control
for sure.
And money.
It
okay.
certainly allows this industry to pay the lowest possible price to the farmer. And that's another reason the authorities don't like it. And the farmer's getting 5 to 20 times more than he would get if he were selling it into this system. So suddenly the farmer has another choice. And also, this fresh raw milk is a miracle healing food. It heals lots of conditions like asthma, osteoporosis, sometimes even helps conditions like autism. And every child or every adult that's healed is a person taken out of the medical system and, contributing financially to that system.
Not buying into the millions of drugs that are killing us.
So there's a very intense hatred of raw milk. It is not justified by the numbers. The numbers that you gave earlier, 76 million people get sick per year from food poisoning, that's 1 in 4, 25%. The same numbers that the government gets, they say 106 get sick from milk, and we believe that's highly exaggerated, but even if it's true, that's only 1/1,000th of all the raw milk drinkers there are get sick every year. So there's raw milk is a very safe food.
So what you're telling us is that it's a threat to those who control
exactly.
the food chain.
It's not a health threat. It is an economic threat. Yeah.
Pete Kennedy?
I'd agree with that. These regulations against raw milk are just economic regulations in the guise of health regulations. It's a way for the dairy farmer to get out of commodity agriculture, get out of the commodity system, which, you know, in most cases today is paying him $1.50 to $2 a system. Mm-hmm. A gallon of milk, and like Sally said, make many times more than that. There's the processing potential. You can turn someone who's making $5 for a gallon of milk and turn that into 4 quarts of yogurt and be paid $5 a quart.
Yeah.
It's a gateway to small farm prosperity. In many instances, raw milk is the food that gets the consumer on the farm in the first place. Once they're there, they might buy meat, produce, other products, but raw milk is what gets them there to begin with. And really, if you look at FDA's main clientele, they're the pharmaceutical and biotech industry. FDA's clients, the pharmaceutical industry, profit by this big confined animal feeding operation system there. No raw milk consumer is going to buy raw milk for a CAFO dairy. So the stronger the raw milk side of the business gets, the weaker potentially these CAFO dairies
will become. So the stronger the local food system becomes, the weaker the industrial food system becomes, and thus the war on food safety by the federal government.
And, you know, I think what Pete's aiming at here is 75% of all the antibiotics produced are used in animals in these confinement dairies and agriculture places. And people don't want that anymore. And so you're seeing the pharmaceutical industry facing a huge downturn in one of their most profitable items.
So what we're seeing here is kind of like a panic attack.
I think there is a little bit of a panic attack, and I believe that this food safety bill is actually designed, it is their weapon against this burgeoning small farm movement put out there in the guise of food safety, but it is really legislation that would give the FDA the power to get the small farmer.
Let's go to the phones. Folks, the phone number is today 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Wendy tuning in. I'm going to try to... Wendy, are you there?
I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to just bring forth the idea of how antiquated the distribution of large-scale milk is. It's almost pre-World War II technology of putting it into large unrefrigerated tankers that would need irradiation or pasteurization, when small producers are probably putting it into a refrigerated environment and keeping it cold.
That is such a good point.
Okay, let's go back to let's go to Carol.
The reason I'm calling in is I just wanted to let everybody know that I went to the town hall with Sam Farr this week, and I actually spoke at the town hall meeting, and I expressed my concerns about this legislation, and I asked him if he supported it, you know, if he had voted for it or mm-hmm. against it, and, you know, what his opinion of the bill was. And he did vote in support of it, and I expressed my concern that it would really affect my relationship, you know, with my farmer if I want to go buy eggs or raw milk or whatever I want to buy, or
yes,
the organic farmer market.
Pete, let me ask you this, Pete. Carol just talked with her congressman about this food safety legislation. And as I understand it, the food safety legislation has passed the House. And is
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And is already in the Senate. So it's done in the House. It's been through the Senate subcommittees. It's sitting on the floor of the Senate, ready to be passed by your senators. That's correct, right?
Yeah. What the House bill, give you an example of the differences between the House and the Senate bill. The House bill originally passed out of committee in June last year. In July, it passed out of the full Senate. The Senate bill passed out of committee in November, and here we are close to 10 months later, and it still hasn't gotten to the Senate floor for a vote yet. There's been a lot of pushback against the Senate bill, but they've come up with this new manager's amendment, and they're using this Wright County egg incident to try and shove the bill down the American public's throat.
So send us a bunch of rotten eggs and then put the bill up for vote.
Yeah, I've been off the phone, but there is an amendment that we endorse, the Tester-Hagen Amendment, which would exempt small farms and small processors from all of this. And as soon as Congress comes back in session, which is, I think it's the 13th of September, we need to get their phones ringing, the Senate, your senators' phones ringing, urging them to adopt the Tester-Hagen Amendment to this bill.
Be right back. Do stay tuned. This is The Food Chain. Well, they're back. The federal government is back with a request to take over 100% control, I guess. That's pretty much what SB 510 does, and the House version of that bill pretty much gives the federal government complete control over the nation's food chain. Is that right, Sally?
I think it eventually would, you know, as they implemented it more and more. Pete's really the expert on the difference between those two bills.
Pete, let me ask you this. Will Carol be able to buy food at the farmer's market with the complete implementation of these two bills that are working their way through Congress?
I think what it would do, Michael, was it would reduce the local food system. It would reduce the viability of the local food system. I mean, what you have under this bill is that even something like a roadside vegetable stand or someone selling produce at a farmer's market could conceivably be under federal regulation. If they sell a type of produce that FDA would issue a national safety standard for. There are provisions in the bill that say FDA is in take into account the scale of a producer in setting these regulations, but that's all they say. They don't say they have to issue regulations based on scale. They just say they have to take it into account. So the way they read right now, they're nothing but empty promises.
Carol?
Yes.
Oh, I just lost a... Okay, Carol, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and finish up.
Well, I was just going to say, and this is kind of specific to my congressman, but just his attitude toward it was a little disappointing, because I expressed my concern that the government regulation would be too onerous, you know, for the small producer. And I even quoted Michael Pollan from his book In Defense of Food, where he says that government regulation is a poor substitute for personal accountability. And I basically expressed that to my congressman, and his response to me was, well, if you die from a head of lettuce, it doesn't matter if it's produced from a small farmer or from a big farmer. So in my mind, he's going to regulate both the same, which was a little bit disappointing.
And you know who will survive then, right?
Right, exactly.
Carol, thanks for the call. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
That's Carol, I guess, pretty much hit it on the head, did she not, Pete? The government has this one-size-fits-all attitude. And, of course, if you're really big, that's what you want. You want to have rules and regulations that are so onerous that only you can comply with them.
Right. This bill is all about restoring market share to the industrial food system. They've been losing it to the local food system. Even if they lose 1% of market share with their low margins, that's a lot.
Right.
Go ahead, Sally.
It's interesting. This bill actually does not mention raw milk, and so they could say, well, this bill is not about raw milk. But the HACCP plans could be used to get rid of raw milk. I mean, they could just keep nitpicking your HACCP plan till you can't comply.
Sure.
And just put all the raw milk people out of business. So,
well, what essentially it does is it gives them the ability to pick on whoever they want.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
They're clearly not picking on the two egg farms in the Midwest that sold us 500 million salmonella contaminated eggs. They're going after Rossum Foods in L.A.
Right. And of course,
the little Amish families, and that's who they're going after. So why?
Yeah, well, and every time you have an outbreak like the current egg outbreak, more and more people say, I've had it. I'm going to buy from a farmer. I'm going to buy from the farmer's market. So the increasing problems with this industrial food supply is actually fueling the growth in the local farm movement, and that the industry is very worried about this. You know, we've heard, you know, cryptic remarks about getting hold of this side of the economy, and this is what this bill is designed to do. And in spite of all the rhetoric about making our food supply safer.
So when we come back from this break, we're going to ask the big question, which is in crisis, local food or industrial food? This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Sally Fallon from the Weston A. Price Foundation. Sally, what's the website there?
It's www.westonaprice.org. That's WESTONAPRICE.org.
And Pete, Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund?
Our website is farmtoconsumer.org. That's farmtoconsumer.org.
Good. Thank you very much. We will be right back for the big question, so please do stay tuned.
Yep.
Well, consider Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. Take the organic broccoli from China that you can pick up down at the big organic box store, for example. I believe that organic broccoli should have an there's no control over it. It's 6,500 miles from where it's grown to where we eat it, you know, so there's no control there. I believe that organic broccoli should have an inspector following every inch of the 6,500 miles it travels from seed to plate. And furthermore, and most importantly, I believe those inspectors should be paid for by the people who consume the broccoli and not by taxpayers. On the other hand, the organic broccoli grown by my friend the Farmer Joe needs no inspector following it around because my trade with Farmer Joe is self-regulating. Farmer Joe sells me contaminated broccoli, he's toast. So I believe the same should be true for milk and for all other commodities too. The farther we go from the source of that food, the more we need to have somebody watching over it. But when we're that close, when we're buying it from the people who produce it, I don't think we need any government at all involved. Sally Fallon, am I crazy?
No, you're not at all crazy, and I'm glad you mentioned the broccoli from China, because one of the things that S510 would do would be give an advantage to overseas producers, and we would see a lot more outsourcing from the American companies because it wouldn't have as much oversight. There is some that's called for in the bill, but you know what that's like. It's honored in the breach rather than in the observance.
Pete?
Yes, I agree with that. It's going to increase our reliance on imported food. The majority of these food facilities that the bills regulate are outside our borders. There are over 200,000 food facilities outside our borders, and according to this bill, the first year, only 600 of those will be inspected by FDA. So while they're regulating the domestic producers much more strictly, the foreign producers will be getting by on a pass. And one of the results of this will be that we will be getting more food in that is produced according to WTO standards, World Trade Organization standards, that are below our standards. And to give you an idea, the WTO is about to set a tolerance level for melamine, and as long as these importers from China and other countries meet that tolerance level, as a signatory to the WTO, we will be forced to take that food into our country.
Even though there's absolutely no food value in melamine whatsoever.
and a real danger.
And a real danger. There's no food there.
And you know, Michael, the other thing is this: if this bill passes, they will be hiring thousands of inspectors here in the United States. And these people are not people who are part of the local foods movement. These mm-hmm. are the people who use non-dairy creamer, you know.
And so, you know who's going to be forced to pay for those inspectors?
And we'll be forced to pay for them. And so you have, and food is such a sensitive subject. People who are not in the food movement think that we're elitist or crazy or something. So there's a lot of hostility there. And the very people that will be hired to carry out these inspections will be people who are inherently hostile to the local food movement.
Well, folks, big thanks to Sally Fallon Morrell, President, Weston A. Price Foundation, Pete Kennedy, Executive Director, Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Stay tuned next week because we're going to do part two of Gods That Damn Food. And this one we're going to talk about the people who are under assault by the federal government, the little people who are being put upon by the big people. Do stay tuned. This has been The Food Chain. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Pete. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.